Welcome everybody to VookCast episode 80. Today we're joined by three others. First of all, Stephen or Ninja Catfish.
Hi.
Daniel or Flame Condor.
Yo yo.
And making her big return, Hope Muse-Shake Corrigan.
You calling me fat?
No.
This amazing start. So great.
I apologize if I insinuated that. Okay, so we've got heaps to talk about this episode, so we'll jump straight into the news, as we usually do. To start off with something small, the Pokemon X and Y eShop download size has been revealed. So if any of you are planning on buying this game digitally, you should probably make some space in your fridge, as they say. the download weighs in at about 1.7 gigabyte. And to compare, Pokemon Black 2 and White 2 were both 500 megabyte. So it's a sizable difference. Did you guys know or read anywhere how many blocks it was?
About 14,000 blocks.
Yeah, so it'll take up about 14,000 blocks, roughly, on your SD card. So get clearing if you want to get download the digital copy. Are you guys buying digitally, or are you going to buy physical?
Physical.
Is that just for the Pokemon Balls, Hope?
A little bit.
I'm getting digital just because it's a game I can see myself playing forever, sort of thing, like Animal Crossing. It's one that's just nice to always have on the system.
Yeah, I can definitely see that argument, but there are Pokemon Balls.
And we do love the Pokemon Balls.
It was the Pikmin clock and a can that signed me over to get the physical version of it.
Yeah.
This Pokemon Ball you throw and just all your games go everywhere and you lose them.
Wouldn't it be awesome if you could throw it at a person and then, like, steal their games and run off?
Is it like a storage thing?
Yeah, it's a cartridge holder.
Far out. Okay. Just for comparison's sake, Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D was 2.1 gig, and Resident Evil Revelations was 3.1 gig.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
3DS games are a hell of a lot bigger than regular DS games.
Yeah.
It's all that third dimension.
Yes.
It's roughly the same size as our Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate.
I see. Well, clear up your space come October, because it's going to take about 1.7 gig.
Animal Crossing was only 750 megabytes.
Yeah, because it's...
it's basic ads.
There's a lot to do on it.
Moving on to the next news story. Europe and Australia were penned to get Bravely Default Flying Fairy, which, as you can probably tell by the name, is a Square Enix title. We were scheduled to get it this year, in 2013, but it slipped into 2014 once again. I don't think they gave a proper reason for the delay, but I honestly am kind of not surprised, because it kind of seemed way too good to be true in the first place. I mean, I know for Flame Condor, Daniel has a US 3DS, so he's not really...
And he's now a cat.
...phased by this news, but... any of you other, to Stephen or Hope, were you guys looking forward to it, or?
It was something I was going to pick up, but it's not, like, crushing or anything. I don't really care when.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's still quite a good thing that it's coming, because it's, you know, mountains and mountains of text that needed to be localized, yeah. So.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather they take longer to do it right. That's, like, my default position on games.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I'm sort of happy. I mean, it's getting a bit of space from, like, Pokemon and Zelda, which are coming out this year, and it's a game I really want to see do well, so it deserves a bit of its own light. Although, I mean, I'm a bit... the one thing I'm worried about with this being pushed back is it might... I mean, because I was hoping what they were going to do was Bravely Default comes out this year, and then maybe one of the Dragon Quest games that's coming out in Japan comes out next year from Square Enix, but...
I don't think... no.
Well, I reckon Dragon Quest VII, or the remake of Dragon Quest VII will come out.
It's nice to want things.
Mario Kart 7 was 635.
In the same breath, it was announced that Mario Golf World Tour for 3DS, which I know everyone here is looking forward to.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Which was thought to be delayed till next year, is still coming this year in Europe and Australia. So that's something to get really excited about.
Did they officially confirm that?
Apparently.
Okay.
In Europe and Australia, so probably not for you. Because Nintendo of America seem not to be bringing anything over at the moment. Quickly. But yeah.
Yeah.
So, exciting news. Delays, but...
are you actually like... I mean, obviously James is being sarcastic, but you sounded sort of worried that you're not getting it. Are you actually excited for it?
Golf?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get Mario Tennis just because all the reviews are pretty rubbishy for it. But everything I'm hearing about this one, Mario Golf sounds a lot better. I am looking forward to that.
So James was just being so incredibly insulting. Well, I mean, nobody would like Dishko.
Well, with the US, I mean,
have you met James?
It's really weird. Like, we were getting games all early. Like, we had Fire Emblem 2 months before everyone else does, but now it's really weird. We're getting Mario and Luigi. Dream Team hasn't come out in the US yet, and I think
Pikmin hasn't even yet.
Yeah,
I think that's very soon.
Yeah,
they've been doing really well here for getting games a bit earlier than.
That said, we've still got stuff like Etrian Odyssey and like all of the Atlas games that still haven't come out in the Europe yet.
So
we're still ahead on third-party releases, but we're falling behind on first-party.
Oh, well.
I'm looking forward to golf.
He's so dismissive.
It's just because Flame Conda talks about how he has the US 3DS and why he bought it every podcast.
Well, look, I bought it more for the games that don't come here, which is the Atlas.
We know!
This one is now no exception.
Now we just need Metroid Other M. We've got a full cast.
Anyway. Okay, moving on. Something really surprising that I thought is Nintendo are kind of starting to do things on the technology side that kind of catch up to other people.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy, hey? Basically, later on this year, Nintendo planned that you'll be able to buy eShop games and such from your PC and smartphone later in the year. I think the most interesting thing to take from this is if you're able to use your eShop account to buy stuff from another device, to me, that kind of shows that they've got that unified account system coming sometime.
Oh, yeah, they'd have to, because, like, yeah, you'd have to sign in on your PC for it to link up to your console. Surely you're not going to sign up with, like, your 3DS friend code or any crap like that.
You would hope not, but then...
Please get rid of
that. Yeah, like...
Yeah.
You would really hope not.
But... probably just be linked to, like, your Club Nintendo account or something.
Yeah, I hope...
I don't know if they'll link it to that.
Well, the 3DS one is.
Yeah.
Mm.
But, yeah, it would be nice if they... I mean, I think it's really cool you can do this, because you can do this for your Xbox, but I don't think you can do it for your PlayStation yet.
Yes,
oh, no, you can do it for PlayStation now.
Yeah, there is PSN Store Online.
Only fairly recently.
But now they're all on the same level, finally.
That only took 10 years.
The one thing that I'm kind of interested to find out is if they are going to have virtual console games, am I going to be able to buy Mega Man 2 on my iDevice or my whatever device, and it will be on my Wii U and my 3DS, or am I going to have to still buy it twice, even though it's the same game on a unified account? That'll look a little bit dodgy next to Sony. It's like, hey, buy PS1 games, you can play them on whatever PlayStation thing you have.
Stephen?
Yes?
It's nice to want things.
Apparently, Daniel's double-dipped quite a bit on Virtual Console.
Only because I've got a US 3... I mean, no...
Oh, do you have a US 3DS?
No.
Why do you have a US 3DS?
What I mean is because, I mean, I'm buying a lot of the NES games that come out again on 3DS just because I find the 3DS is a better way to play them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I find it easier to play those games on the go.
Anyway. Just
what kind of 3DS do you have, Blaine?
A blue one.
No, but like, where's it from?
What?
From the planet Earth.
I love this podcast.
So, yeah, Nintendo are going to update the eShop so you'll be able to buy games from your PC or your smartphone later in the year, which is good. So you can use the eShop and buy games in style while you're out.
I'll be in the club by Mega Man 6.
Quite an exciting prospect.
It really is.
Mega Man 6.
So, in Smash Brothers news, because we haven't had any Smash Brothers news for quite a while now, I feel like. I mean, they confirmed Olimar, but that wasn't that exciting, let's be honest. Sakurai, who is the director, has said that he's pretty happy to put Reggie in Smash Brothers.
God, no.
If... Oh, wait, no, let me reword this. So there's a lot of fan petitions going up and stuff that's really asking for Reggie to be put in Smash Brothers, and, you know, Reggie himself has said that his body is ready.
Of course he has!
If Sakurai allows it, so I'm kind of hoping it doesn't happen, because it would be really stupid, but, I mean, what do you guys think?
Well, the idea that I've seen thrown around online is having a Mii character, and maybe if you don't import your own, then the defaults could be a Reggie or an Iwata or whatever. But yeah, I kind of agree that having a Reggie would be, I don't know, it doesn't sit right.
I mean, I kind of said that about, I would never have thought Wii Fit Trainer would be a good fit, but...
She's kind of kick-ass.
Yeah, but...
Yeah.
But then, But she's Wii Fit Trainer. She's kind of like, you know, a character still. But this
I can't really work out what his attacks would be.
Like marketing charts or like...
Well, his final attack would be like he'll take your name and kick your ass.
He just like pull out the Wii wheel and no one will cheer.
He just says stuff and then the other person can't move or something.
Well, if Reggie comes back, they should bring back Cammy. That's how I feel.
If you're Iwata, you bring out the vitality sensor. Everyone's like, oh, that's
and then it disappears and does yeah. nothing.
I like the idea of it being like a default me sort of thing, but then that opens up a floodgates of like, oh, look, I've got Hitler in Smash Brothers or crap like that.
Yeah, that's true, but...
Or Admiral Akbar.
Well, I've already got Hitler in my Street Pass Plaza, so Smash Bros. Is only one step.
Oh, you got him as well?
Yeah, got him at PAX.
Oh, okay.
Hitler.
Man, what are his attacks? Wait, don't tell me. Don't know anything.
Does anyone remember back when Brawl was being in development? I'm sure there was a petition to get Admiral Akbar into Smash Bros.
Probably. There's petitions to get everyone in, I'm sure. Yeah. But yeah, so Reggie says he's ready to be in Smash Bros. If Sakurai allows it. I don't think he will, but we'll see what happens.
I like the way he's just passed the buck there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
He was like, shit.
It's not my fault if I'm not in there.
It's not my fault if I am.
Blame it on Japan.
Okay. More bad news for Wii U, which is, I'm kind of sick of saying this, but there is more bad news for Wii U. Batman Arkham Origins, which is the new follow-up to Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, has just been confirmed to have a multiplayer mode. The only thing is, the Wii U version will not be getting online multiplayer at all. So, it's coming to Wii U still, which I guess is good, but nothing online will be included, so you won't have that extra component. I'm not 100% sure if this is a huge loss, because the multiplayer kind of reeks of that kind of tacked-on thing that they do to keep you from trading the game in.
What is the multiplayer?
Basically, you play as Batman or Robin, and you go against, like, a group of the Joker's villains or Bane's villains or something. I don't really know how it works. I honestly haven't seen the trailer or anything.
So you know, like the Hunter, I forget what the proper term for it is, but the bit where you saw like Batman hiding up in the rafters and catching crooks and stuff like that, but co-op.
Kind of, I would assume so.
Oh, like the challenge modes, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always thought that a co-op version of that would be kind of cool, or one where you're like where you control the henchmen and are trying to locate Batman or Robin.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they're doing. It's in development by Splash Damage, who are the guys who did Brink, which means I wouldn't get too excited for it just yet.
Yeah.
Hey, they did good things before Brink, though.
Well, you're only as good as your last game, Steven.
Yes, yes.
But the thing is, I mean, that's the thing, I don't want to write this off, because, I mean, Mass Effect and Assassin's Creed, to me, didn't need multiplayer, but I really enjoyed both of them when they came out.
Yeah, they were pretty great.
So, it could be good. But, yeah, so the Wii U's not getting any of it at all, so, I mean, this is...
Have they said why?
I don't... See...
CBS.
I have a theory about this. They have said why. Because of...
Let's hear the theory first.
Well, my theory is that all the other consoles have some sort of centralized online... sort of multiplayer architecture. You've got Xbox Live and PSN, and they do peer-to-peer themselves, whereas Nintendo have said every publisher needs to sort that out for themselves, and evidently Warner Brothers just can't be stuffed or don't think it's worthwhile setting up servers for the three people that'll probably buy it on Wii U.
That's my...
Well, then there's two other people.
That was my thinking as well, because there's not really a... There's not like a unified kind of online framework for the Wii U at the moment. I know they've announced one, but it seems to be taking its time to getting out the gate because, you know, we've got all these games missing out. Because, I mean, even...
Yeah, and I mean, the last time that there was a publisher has to do it was a PS2, and that kind of didn't work, and so they went to the centralized live approach, and I feel like Nintendo are learning that lesson 10 years late.
I don't know, this is going to be another thing where they got to go, like, they'll make a game, and then because it's got less features than the other versions, no one's going to buy it, and then
the reason it
doesn't sell well is because, oh, well, it's on the Wii U, no one buys it. So, well, no one bought it because you released a gimped version on the Wii U.
Yeah, that's pretty
much... It's like Mass Effect 3. Why the hell would I buy that if I could just buy Mass Effect Trilogy for the same price?
Yeah, Nintendo have given, the official reason that Warner Brothers have given, is that there's just not an audience for it on the Wii U. That's what they've actually said. So, I mean, it's
I would play it. I have an audience.
Yeah. It's kind of, I don't know, it's such a cop-out thing to me, because it's kind of like this chicken and egg dilemma where, you know, does the lack of audience come first because there's no consoles being sold, or does the lack of audience come from, you know, releasing gibbed versions on the console? So it's hard to...
It's like the predicament the Wii U's in general. It's like, are people not buying it because there's no games, or are there no games because people aren't buying it?
It's got to be like, it's just one of those things that they go hand in hand. It's like, if you have money, you can invest it and make more money.
Yeah.
If you don't, you're stuck with having no money, and it's the same sort of situation. Like, you can't get anywhere without it either. So it's just going to gimp around for a while.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not, I'm going to be perfectly honest, I was going to buy this on Xbox anyway, so I'm not hugely dismayed by this news, but it really does, it really sucks that they're missing out again. Especially since I thought Warner Brothers were quite staunch supporters of the Wii U, so, you know.
Yeah, with Scribblenauts, and, I mean, they seem to be one of the ones who are more behind it.
And, you know, the team who's making this game kind of, you know, broke in their development experience with the Wii U version of Arkham City, so, yeah, but...
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows what happens behind the scenes? We'll never know.
I think a lot of publishers had higher hopes for the Wii U, and compared to what's actually happened with it.
I don't know, it's the whole thing is just...
They got scared away.
Yeah, I mean, like, Ubisoft definitely did, but I don't think EA ever really expected, or was strongly behind it. But at least we're getting Call of Duty now. That's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that our next story will lead into this quite nicely.
So, speaking of which, bad things and Wii U. Nintendo have announced, and we've quite appropriately tagged it with disaster on the site, that in the period between April and June 2013, there was only 160,000 units of Wii U sold worldwide. So
it's not much.
We're officially sitting at 3.6 million units lifetime.
Still more than the Vita.
That is true.
and we are kicking the Ouya's ass.
As both of those benchmarks are not very impressive, so...
I was going to say, is it even okay to say those things? Or is that just like admitting defeat?
We take what we can get. The most interesting part of that I noticed were the Australian and European numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Of those 160,000 worldwide, only 10,000 of them were in Australia and Europe.
So Australia and Europe, 10,000 combined?
Yeah, combined.
Okay. So just for anyone who hasn't seen it, the breakdown is 90,000 were sold in Japan, 60,000 in the US, and 10,000 in Australia and all of Europe, so...
That kind of almost makes me feel special for owning
it. Yeah, we're part of an exclusive club.
It's doing appalling in UK at the moment. I mean, several retailers have just stopped stocking it.
So I think the thing is, what do you guys think is the reason for this? Like, why is nobody buying a Wii U? I think, you know, between April and June especially, there were no games.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it.
But is it the price as well? Because, I mean, I know a lot of people think it's too expensive still.
I don't think it's too expensive.
It's too expensive for a system with no games.
I think because of the last generation of consoles, a lot of people have it set in their mind that a Nintendo console is, well, I mean, not a real console, but maybe a console that's only really useful for Nintendo games, because that's a mindset people have developed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been the mindset for a long time.
The problem with that is if you want to play Nintendo games, you have two options. You have the 3DS, which has a lot of really good ones, or the Wii U, which has, you know, some really good ones, but not as much compared to the 3DS. And when it comes, I mean, it sort of sounds funny that the Wii U's biggest competitor is the 3DS.
No, I don't know about that. It's a home console versus a portable.
No, I can see where he's coming from. If people only think of it as a Nintendo gaming device, then there are two of those, and thus they sort of become competitors in a way.
I suppose.
And you look at a lot of the games that have come out for the Wii U, you've got New Super Mario Bros. U. Well, there was a similar game released a few months earlier, which sold a lot. Lego City Undercover. The Wii U version didn't sell a lot, but the 3DS version, which wasn't as good and rated really badly, sold a lot more.
Yeah, but there are a lot more people who own 3DS.
That could be if someone goes, I want this open world Lego game, I could buy the Wii U for it, or I could just, you know, get the 3DS version. It's kind of the same thing anyway.
Mm.
I think as well as that, Nintendo really dropped the ball on marketing, as they admitted not long ago. It's like, you've seen, I'm not sure if everyone here has seen it, but there was a Target catalogue that had a Wii U advertised, and it was a gamepad sitting on top of a Wii. And just no one seems to know why this isn't, it's not a new box, it's a thing that goes with the Wii. And
but that's the thing, a lot of people that's think. The thing with the Wii U is... Nintendo's kind of gotten into that habit of, you know, releasing a DS, a DSi, and then a DSi XL. So there's all these revisions and stuff, and, you know, all the general population who, like, the person who buys them, like some dumb parent or something, just sees the revisions, and, you know, they've been conditioned to just expect these revisions. So when they announced the Wii U, so many people thought it was a handheld console coming out, that was like Nintendo's competitor for the iPad, or that it was some upgrade for your Wii that you didn't need 100%.
They shouldn't have named it Wii.
Yeah, that's what I think as well. I don't think they should have named it Wii U.
I think Wii 2 would have been a much better name than Wii U.
No.
Well, no, because it would have
been a hell of a lot easier to market.
It would have been easier to market, but I don't think it would have been a better name.
Yeah.
It's just that it's been a long time since Nintendo have used the same name in succession.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
The Wii, and also, I mean, getting back to not using the Wii name is worth nothing now. I mean, back in 2006, when the Wii came out, and it had a lot of momentum behind it, but the last 2 years of the Wii's life, they did nothing, and whatever momentum and goodwill they had was gone. So by the time they released the Wii U, the Wii's name meant nothing. And
it also doesn't help that we've, like we said before, we've got that Nintendo mindset now that the Wii is just for this. So now they released another Wii, and they're trying to compete. That they're literally trying to say that it's a hardcore console like the others, I guess, in marketing speak or whatever. But they've named it the same, so no one's going to think of it that way.
I mean, I think it's kind of telling that me, who is a staunch Nintendo supporter and bought a Wii U on day one, I still only own 4 games for it, and of those, I've only really enjoyed 2 of them a great deal. There should be more games by now.
I own 3, which is exciting.
I'm in the same sort of boat, and I make excuses to try to get games for it, because it's a new console, I want to play it.
Yeah.
So even making excuses, I can't find reasons to play the thing.
Just a quick question, though. Kind of going back to the last story, Batman, but who is buying Assassins or Watch Dogs on Wii U? Or Splinter Cell?
I might get Watch Dogs, I don't know.
Watch Dogs, definitely Assassins, definitely Batman, yeah. I mean, I don't play my 360 anymore. I can get them on Steam, but I prefer to play console stuff on consoles.
If they did the gamepad right on Watch Dogs, it'd be a pretty, like,
Does anyone know what's happening with that? I mean, you'd think that would be a big selling point for it, but because the whole thing about using your mobile phone to hack into
no one knows.
Or whatever.
Anyway, we're going a bit off topic. Let's go back.
Well, okay, with the bad position the Wii is in, can they turn it around?
I question this as well. I think the perfect thing to do would be this December, release Mario Kart, because that's the game that everyone plays. Like, Mario is good, but not as wide-reaching in terms of the general public as Mario Kart. And they should have done that, and then, you know, you would have sold systems for Christmas. But I don't think they will. So I think, I mean, if you look at the next-gen consoles at the moment, there's only going to be $100 difference between the premium Wii U and the PS4. And that's quite a dramatic jump in technology. So I just feel like, I mean, I know it's not comparable at all, but I know that the general public, all they look at really is price and games.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's going to pay $500 for a Mario Kart machine.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, they've got to just bolster their entire lineup and then maybe drop the price as well. But
Because I think it's a two-pronged sort of deal, because they've tried dropping the price, or retailers dropped the price by like £100 in the UK. Didn't sell any better. Still sold pretty rubbishy.
I think there's no reason to get a Wii U over a half, you know, an Xbox 360 at half the price. Like, we've got Zombie U, and that's about it for games that say, hey, this is what the gamepad is, a thing that differentiates it from any other console. But we've not really had anything else to say, this is why you should buy this console over anything else. And if you can get pretty much the same games for half the price, why would you?
My main worry is about...
Unless you ask.
My main worry is about... I mean, they're running out of time to relaunch it. Like, they sort of need to relaunch it if they want to before the Xbox One and PS4 come out, because I just think any momentum they could get is going to be lost by those two being out there.
Oh, yeah, they're going to take over. Because the only selling point it's got at the moment is that it's the new console that's out.
And graphics!
Yeah, I think in the end it's gonna become, the GameCube. Like, we're gonna love, you know, there'll be a fantastic couple of games on it, and it's gonna have a legacy. It'll be super, but no one will buy one. And yeah.
I'm kind of excited to own a GameCube this time.
Yeah, I think by 2015 or maybe 16, there'll be like a new Nintendo console out. They just can't.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the other thing was, I read that, you know, Nintendo still turned a profit, and the attach rate is quite good, which is kind of like, you know, very, very optimistic view.
But that profit's more associated to the 3DS.
Is it?
I'd imagine so.
I believe that, I'm pretty sure they're selling the Wii U at a profit, whereas most of the other manufacturers, at least at launch, were selling their consoles at a loss. So
at a profit for ages in the last gen. Like, the Wii and the DS sold at a profit, but all the others were losing money for years and years and years.
Looking at what's inside the Xbox One and PS4, there's no way you could build an equivalent machine off-the-shelf parts for the price they're selling it. Yeah. So unless they've got some very, very good agreements in place, they're selling that at a loss. And yeah, I think like Nintendo just plainly don't want to do that. I think they've straight up said that a couple months ago. So yeah, it's going to make that price comparison that came up before, it's just going to make it hard to justify the Wii U.
And it's already losing shelf space, and like,
yeah, that's the other thing.
That's hard to get back.
Another thing that reminds me of
that's
the GameCube.
That's what Vuk was saying, like, you know, where he's writing all these stories, and all it reminds him of is the GameCube, like, where, you know, there's no games coming out, retailers are downgrading the presence on the shop floor, and
Except this time it's going to be a machine that's not as well spec'd as all the competitors as well, so it's going to be even more
different.
Do you think
it was a mistake on their part to release earlier?
I think they had no choice to, based on how the Wii was going. It was dropping off in sales, and they had to do something. But, I mean, what could you do besides release a new console?
It seems that they did release it early because they plainly weren't prepared for having games available for it.
I mean, the day one update, we all remember that, right?
Yeah,
what
that
it looks
fun.
Like, what it looks like before you updated it. So it obviously shipped quite unfinished. But then again, Xbox One's doing that now too.
I mean,
but
it's just everything they've done with this is just like the lack of games. Like, they just weren't ready for the HD development, which they have no excuse for, because they sat and watched everyone else do that for 6 years. They should have known this is what we need to get ready for. But
do you know
what?
I just think it also might be the ego kind of got the better of them as well, because, you know, the Wii did so well. We've just hit 100 million consoles shipped for the Wii, so...
Mm.
I think they just had a huge head when they released it. So
they also always try to, like, I don't know if it's the right word for it, but they always feel like they're trying to take the high ground. Like, you know, people should pay a certain amount. That's the quality kind of thing. Like, they have that mentality, and that's not the mentality the rest of the world has.
I think they could have that mentality if they had the games for it. But
yeah, I think exactly that. Like, I've seen that mentality a lot with, when people are saying, well, why don't you make games for iPhone? It's like, well, they're not the same type of thing. An iPhone game's made by a person, and Nintendo game's made by someone with, you know, 40 years experience and giant teams and budgets. But yeah, I think console-wise, they don't quite have that pedestal to stand on when a console is technically inferior to all their competition very soon.
But yeah, so hopefully they can turn it around, but we'll see what happens, I guess.
Hey, but at least the 3DS is awesome.
Yep. Okay.
Yay.
Moving on. This is kind of surprising to me. I don't know about you guys. Nintendo released, as we know, the new Street Pass games. They were kind of DLC for the Mii Plaza. Like, you could... How much were they? Do you guys know?
I think it was $20 for all of them.
Yeah.
$20 for all of them. So, Nintendo haven't been promoting them or anything. they haven't done really advertisements or anything for them here. But apparently these games have brought in over $4.5 million to Nintendo, which to me is crazy. Like, for games that are just so, they're so cheap, you gotta remember, like, you know, and they've still brought in $4.5 million. I mean, I haven't played them. I know Flame probably has.
Oh yeah.
I was thinking I should probably buy them before PAX so I'd be able to get into them, but I just didn't bother because they... It just seems like, to me, Street Pass is this little time-wasting add-on, like a, you know, like a 99-cent iPhone game. This is a thing that is similar to a mobile game. It's just a time-waster. You kind of scroll through the people that you find and then press buttons and they kill things.
I find that Street Pass is a really tedious activity.
I found that exact same experience during PAX.
It was like, oh, and I wanted to clear them because I wanted to get them.
Are there maximums?
Yeah, you can only get 10 at a time. Yeah.
What?
Until you've cleared it, no more will come through.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
So you had people that would spend hours a day just on Street Pass just to clear it so they could get more Street Passes.
10 at a time, wow.
Do you have the new Street Pass games, Hope?
No, God no.
Okay. It depends on what Street Pass stuff you're talking about. Like me, Find Me or whatever it's called, that's a bit...
They
have different names for the American thing. Did I mention I have an American 3DS? Apparently I didn't.
Do you have
it? I didn't say that at all. I mean, the new games, I get 3, maybe 4 Street Passes a day just because, you know, public transport and all that. And the bus ride home, like half my bus ride I used to be able to play a lot more games. Now half of it seems to be just going through these Street Pass games because they are a lot more involved. Especially MeForce, which is this really awesome little sort of Gradius-style shooter game.
If they're good games and they're reasonably priced, then that's great. But I still just find Street Passing things really tedious.
They are freaking awesome games.
I couldn't justify $20 on Street Pass games. It's just because it's this little time waste that I do instead of playing actual games that I enjoy. I couldn't justify $20 on it.
I think Street Pass is the most awesome feature of the 3DS. I just love... Like,
I wish there was more Street Passy involvement in other 3DS games, though.
Yeah.
Like, good stuff. Like, the stuff in Animal Crossing is not bad. Like, I dig the houses. But a lot of them don't bother doing anything.
Yeah, and I think the Fire Emblem stuff's reasonably interesting.
A problem with that is that you only have a limited amount of Street Pass slots you can set up. I think you can only set up, like, 8 games to Street Pass.
I think it's, 8 or 9.
And I've already maxed it out. I've deleting games and changing stuff around and all that.
I don't think I've played 8 games yet.
I love this stunned silence after that.
Yes.
I probably have.
I know. I'm not surprised. I mean, they're really good little games, the new ones. And I mean, somewhere like Japan, where Street Pass is a lot bigger thing, makes sense.
Well, I like that everyone was super excited about it because we got an update for it before it was even meant to come out. And everyone was, you know, saying, I'm going to buy it before it was even announced to be a thing. So, obviously, people are excited about it, but I'm just not.
I mean, it's really hard to explain, but, I mean, I really like Street Pass. It's my, I mean, I love that you're, like, after a day out, and they say, oh, I've got this little green flashing light, I've passed someone.
I think PAX killed Street Pass for me.
Yeah, I think it did for me a little bit as well.
There's this bus stop I go past every morning, and then I always get a Street Pass from the same person. I'm like, oh, goodbye, fellow traveller in the night.
That's creepy.
Can you imagine, like, living and you know that you're alone and everything, and then you wake up with a Street Pass? We've got Street Pass Creepy Pasta.
That's a good horror movie. I should do that. The Street Pass is coming from inside the house.
And some wet girl crawls out of your DS in 3D.
Wet girl.
An awesome horror game.
They could really, like, they could do something really good with it in the horror sense if, like, they just, like, kind of gave everyone an update and it was really creepy and no one knew what was going on and they were getting this random Street
Pass. You just Street Pass Jason Voorhees.
there was kind of a game that kind of played around with that, but it wasn't on DS. It was called The Nameless Game. And you know, everyone played the game, and when they it was kind of like The Ring. When they played it, they died within 7 days or something, but as you got closer to death, the game would corrupt more. It was quite good, but anyway,
I mean, I like with stuff like New Super Mario Brothers, how you get other people's coin rush times to beat, or Mario Kart 7. It's, I mean, the ones that add this sort of little leaderboard element.
Yeah, it's neat having a local leaderboard as opposed to just worldwide.
That would be cool if they didn't limit it to 8.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, I'm sure because of the way the data transfer would happen, it wouldn't, I mean, you wouldn't be passing.
Maybe that's the best they can get without draining the battery or something.
I'd say that, yeah, because they'd have to be constantly doing processing stuff in the background. I'd say if they have any more, it might adversely affect game performance
just
and things like that.
Just because of how short of a time frame you've got for a street pass. Like, you walk past someone and then, I don't know what the range on it is. So it might only have, like, a couple of seconds to just quickly get all this data across.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, street pass.
Okay, so that's pretty much it for all the news that we've got to speak about this fortnight. So we'll have some nice, soothing Pikmin music, and we will return to speak about the only game that Wii U's got in the last 4 months that we're talking about. And we're back, so we'll talk about the big major release for this fortnight, which was Pikmin 3.
Not the virtual Wii U console release of Harvest Moon.
Okay. No, not that. So, I mean, I was... The first thing that I thought about Pikmin 3 was I kind of wasn't excited for it because I played the first one when I was, what, like 12 or whenever it came out.
Yeah.
And I kind of liked it, but I knew in my head that I couldn't appreciate it as much, or, like, it just wasn't my kind of game when I was younger. So I didn't really know what to expect, because I kind of forgotten all about it. Because I never even played Pikmin 2 either. I completely skipped that.
That was far better than Pikmin 1.
How depressing that I missed it.
Lots of people did skip it, though. I mean, I've got it on, I've got the Wii version. I've got the Wii new Play Control version of it, but I never got it on GameCube, and heck, I don't even...
Was it released here, or was it released late?
Oh, yeah, it was definitely released
here.
Yeah,
it was here. I remember seeing it in stores.
But yeah, I'd completely missed it. So when I played Pikmin 3, I was quite happy to find that it's quite fun. And it's very, I kind of get really anxious because, like, you've got to organize so much stuff and, like, it kind of gets me a little bit overwhelming if you don't know what you're doing.
You sort of need to, you know, once you start the day, you sort of need to plan what you're going to do and, like...
Yeah, it actually urges you to do that on the loading screen, and, like, I didn't for a long time, and the moment that I was like, okay, look at the map, I'm going to go here, 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 everything just worked, because you can multitask now.
Yeah.
I mean, the last stage I was playing through, I sort of mucked up, and I thought, no, I'll just restart it, and then I played it again, just sort of, okay, I'm going to get this all done first, and then that, and then I'll go kill the boss. Sorry, Harry.
Could not care less about this game.
My only issue is, like, I don't know how long the game lasts for. Like, I'm kind of scared, because I'm kind of taking my time, right? And I'm scared, does anyone know if there's a limit to the days that you can play?
There's not, no, it just keeps going.
Oh, okay, so I can kind of play it a little bit more laid back then. Because I'm doing things very slowly, and I'm, like, taking my time and, like, you know, beating the bosses and rescuing everyone and stuff, so... it's very cruisy the way that I'm playing it, and I really like it that way.
I think that's the way it's meant to be played. It seems like it gives you some general directions, like, hey, you can go over there, but I just found myself exploring, and if I found something that triggered a new story element, fantastic, but I just didn't feel the urge to go straight to the objective like I would in most games. It was just, I explored and found some fruit and made some blended juice, and it was great.
Oh, the juice. The juice just looks so nice. Every time I play a game, I want juice. It's like Fruit Ninja.
Oh, man, that makes me want fruit so bad, that game.
Yeah, the only issues I really have with it, I reckon it's really hard to play with the gamepad after you've played it with the Wii remote.
Yeah, I tried the gamepad once and just thought, nah, it's so much easier
than
the pointer.
I've only been playing with the gamepad just because where I've got it set up, it's sort of a bit of a pain to play with pointer controls. Is it, what's the difference?
Well, you know, like the little thing that Olimar uses?
Yeah,
the little, I mean, not Alpha, Alf. the other people.
Just on that note, I love how they talk. They're just like, gobble, double, double, double.
Brittany Tempura.
I was like, Pikmin.
I swear I've heard him say Tempura several times.
Tempura. Anyway, we
can
continue.
I just want
our
whole podcast to be that.
I thought about it.
The only thing that really annoys me is I feel like the AI is really shit, but maybe I did it wrong, because, I mean, my third day, I think I had like 80 red Pikmins and stuff, and I saved Brittany, and she was like, yeah, give me the Pikmins. So I gave her the Pikmins, and then she ran into the water and drowned them. I was very, like, you know, I was like, I expected you to go over the bridge, but she didn't. She just ran into the water, and like...
How did you get that to happen?
It actually surprised me with how smart it is at some points. Like, this is, I'm up to about day 30, 10 hours in at the moment. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, a little bit ahead, I assume. Yeah. But there's one point where there's a river and you have to cross it by jumping on lily pads that go past. And you know how you can choose a character, tap somewhere on the map and just tell them to go there.
Yeah.
They'll wait for a lily pad to come, jump onto it, wait for the next junction and jump off. It surprised me that they were smart enough to do that. I was expecting them just to wait there and expect me to come back and direct them through that. But they have also drowned a lot. So,
yeah, like, I mean, yeah. I hate that. And I hate seeing them die. Like, I know it sounds really weird because...
It's so harrowing.
There's, you know, you can just produce more easily, but it's so sad to see them drown. And Brittany, it was all her fault.
Just like children.
Yes.
I was so angry at her.
It's just like children. Like, at the end of the day, like, I had a point where I had, like, it gives you that counter when the day is finishing up as to how many Pikmin you have left unaccounted for, and I had, like, 50 or 60.
What?
And I was just like, where are you? And I was just scouring the map furiously for them, and then the day ended, and then the ones I had with me got away, and then, like, this entire map of Pikmin just come and get eaten by things.
You're a horrible person. Sad.
I know I'm a horrible person.
And then you got over it and you made more, just like children.
Yeah, I did. Then there's more popped out.
It's really funny how they make you care about them. Even though they are sort of just these, you know, you can make as many as you want, but every one you lose is like, no!
That point where you accidentally throw a one with a bomb into a group and you're just like frantically calling them back and then they all explode.
And then you see the little ghosts float up to the sky.
Yes, or their little Japanese spirits.
It's so sad.
And they go,
it's just sad that, I mean, it's sort of the Nintendo Touch. It's just they've put so much character into these little tiny insignificant sort of creatures. And
that
just,
don't speak.
Yeah, and it's like, no!
It's crazy.
I think that's the main thing I get from this game. It does have that sort of trademark Nintendo charm. Just sort of oozes it, as all their best games do. And even though it's a little rough around the edges gameplay-wise, and the graphics are a bit all over the place, but it's got that Nintendo feel to it, which is, you know, is what we were saying before. That's why you buy a Nintendo system for the Nintendo games, because they have that sort of... Oh, actually, getting back... So what are the pointer controls like? Is it like... Pikmin 2.
Oh, so basically it's the same. Like, you know, you need an unchuck and stuff. You move around, but you know the little reticule that you use to gather your Pikmin and stuff?
Yeah.
That's controlled with your pointer, so you can point wherever you want.
Okay.
It's just easier than, you know, kind of the kind of half, is it going to go the right way setup that has with the dual analog sticks, you know what I mean?
That's the problem. I mean, I've only played with the gamepad, and that's the problem I've had, is that the reticule is aimed by the same stick that does your movement. And I'm thinking, why wouldn't you just put the reticule on your camera control one? Because I'd rather the camera always be looking at where my reticule's pointing, other than my reticule be where I'm moving to, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I remember in the earlier games, your second stick was what you used to navigate your Pikmin around and kind of point them towards the thing you want them to interact with.
The best thing to do, to me, is just use the Wii Remote and then have the gamepad next to you for the map.
Yeah, it's kind of weird and really cool in that way. Like, you'll get calls from the direct, and it'll, like, come up on your gamepad, and it's like a little video call from a person, and it's amazing.
But that's the thing, I suppose, like, in the game, like, the story is that the gamepad is your communicator or whatever, so you have to pick that up.
So this cool little fourth wall-breaking thing.
Yeah.
Kind of very similar to what a lot of developers look to be doing with Smart Glass, except, you know, already done.
In terms of, like, you know, this game started off on GameCube, or maybe Wii, and then was eventually upported.
Yeah, it seems like it was a Wii upport to a degree.
Because of the graphics?
Just because you can play it entirely without the gamepad, almost.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, also, like, the graphics are a bit all over the place. Like, some stuff you can see, it's like, that could have been Wii sort of stuff. Like, I think it was my second or third day, and everything in the overworld looked really nice and beautiful, and then it went into a cave, and it's just, ooh, looks a bit low poly, or then when it does the ultra zoom in of Alf and Brittany, and then you can see the ground looks like a day peg, and it's like, oh, it looks really good from up here, but the minute you sort of zoom in, it's like, okay.
I love how at the end of each day they'll have a diary entry, and a lot of the time there'll be story specific stuff. Or if you've lost a lot of Pikmin, they'll lament the loss of the great soldiers, and it's just a really nice, combined with that really relaxing music. It's just like a really good debrief from the busy day of Pikmining, you know, making small things do your being.
The other thing I love is like finding Olimar's journals all over the planet as well.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm not going to say anything, but yeah, that's super interesting.
So cool. Something I've noticed with the diaries, is it different whoever you ended the day controlling, they are the ones that does the diary entry, or is it something else? Because the last time I played, I was using Brittany last, and then she was the one who did the diary entry, and I'm like, okay, does that mean you get a...
I'm not actually sure. I haven't really noticed it.
But
it's just sort of seemed random to me, but I don't really pay attention to who I'm controlling because they're just the same person in a different skin to me.
Yeah, they are. They are pretty much, right?
So you care a lot about the Pikmin, but the actual characters who have names, you're like, whatever, same guy, different skin.
Well, Brittany killed my Pikmin, so I don't care about her.
And whenever you go to have the juice at the end of the day, Brittany's like, I don't want to share this with everyone else. I want to drink it all.
Wow.
So she's not very
greedy.
Nice.
She's a bitch.
Diary entry I just did was like just after they'd found the mobile phone or the data hog or whatever they called it or something.
I love their names for things.
When you get the lemon, it's the face crinkler. But she was mentioning how Alf is really excited because he's got this phone and it'll help stuff. The world map, those are countries based on real world. Because I'm looking at the Forest of Hope and I'm like, that's Australia!
It's set in Australia, definitely. I assume it's set in far future Earth.
Yeah, it is. Where the world...
Where all the continents have terraformed.
Because I wasn't sure. I was like, maybe it's just a coincidence it's like Australia. And then it went to the next year and I'm like, that's Kuala Lumpur above us. That's bloody Australia.
Yeah, and no, I mean, it's definitely set on Earth with all the various things
they
you find.
They kind of allude to that in the first game, that it was Earth and the world. Because
you found, like, Duracell batteries in the first game.
Yeah, and, like, the world's been wiped out.
That could be cool if you found, like, an old, like, a Game Boy or, like, an old NES controller or something.
I'm surprised they haven't done that.
I swear you did in the first game.
That's surprising. Because that's very Nintendo.
Yeah, so we had one question from our community. I don't know. I think the only person who could probably answer this is Steven. We've got a question from Zach on the Facebook page, and he asked if any of us were disappointed by the lack of purple or white Pikmin in the story mode, or do you guys feel it was needed to keep the game from not being too complicated?
I think the latter, because honestly, I've got five types of Pikmin now, and micromanaging between them is not tedious, but I feel like if there were another two types on top of that, it would just be far too much because you've got a limit of, you know, the 100 that you can have in the field at any one time. And when that's stretched across five different types, you'd kind of have to prepare for, I'm going to a place where I'm going to need lots of yellow Pikmin. So you'll have to, you know, adjust accordingly. Whereas now I just take equal amounts of all of them and I usually have enough to sort everything out. So yeah, I think it would have overcomplicated things.
And yellow and white Pikmin aren't the new ones for Pikmin 3, are they?
No, the new ones for Pikmin 3 are the rock Pikmin, which are rocks with legs, basically, and leaves on top. And you throw them at glass things to shatter them. And then you've got flying Pikmin, which so far they haven't gotten the blue Pikmin, which can go in water. But the flying Pikmin are almost similar because they can fly over the water. So they kind of add another element of exploration, but I'm guessing the blue ones can actually go underwater because there's lots of things I've found at the bottom of rivers that nothing can carry out.
So, I mean, I haven't gotten far enough to even find the white or the purple Pikmin.
They're the ones that aren't in
it. Oh, they're not in it at all.
No, well, I don't... They're not in the story.
There is multiplayer.
I think they might be in some of the
missions.
I mean,
maybe the emphasis on in the story mode is kind of, you know, on the new ones, which, I mean, you can find the rock ones straight away.
Yeah, I mean, the red, yellow, and blue are the iconic Pikmin, and these new ones are the new ones. So, yeah, it would make sense to go with those rather than the kind of weird offshoot ones that they added in the second game.
Because of their name, like, it feels like Pikmin are just like Pokemon, but with everything cut out. They've even just made their name the same, but cut out.
I really wish there was a Pikmin Pokemon. I would train one. It's already got evolutions in place.
That's what I mean. It feels like that's where they got the idea.
What? It, It's the flower opens up.
It's better than an ice
everyone
cream.
Everyone hates on the ice cream way too unfairly. I'm part of the ice cream defense force.
It's not a bag of rubbish.
Yeah, Trubbish was pretty bad.
That's Kesha, the Pokemon.
The gold standard for rubbish Pokemon has been set. Nothing can be worse than a bag of rubbish.
I thought that the new Pikmin were kind of uninspired to start with. It was like, why don't you just have Pikmin pick up rocks and throw them? But I don't know, throwing the actual Pikmin is a little bit different, and I like the flying ones because they can pick up stuff and carry it over rivers as opposed to being limited by bridges that you make and things like that. So it kind of, yeah, I like the flying ones. They're cute and pink.
Has anyone tried the multiplayer?
I played a little bit of it at the PAX
demo. Yeah, I really want to try the bingo game. It sounded great from the E3 impressions we had, but no one's been to my house recently, so...
And there's no online, is there?
Nah, it's not online at all.
Welcome to the future.
Yeah.
I mean, they said that apparently it would be too hard to replicate all your Pikmin moving on the other person's...
I mean, I kind of understand that, because you can have 100 each,
but
you know?
StarCraft.
Yeah, but... Yeah, Total Annihilation and all that.
Oh, yeah, true.
Supreme Commander. I mean, I think it is a huge missed opportunity this didn't have online, because I could see competitive Pikmin games being quite fun.
I mean, I want to say... I want to defend them and say, you know, this was a quick and dirty port from the Wii to the Wii U, but then it took months to come out. So, yeah. Like, it probably could have had, you know, something, but,
I mean,
you know.
The state it's in now, I think I would have been a lot more happier with that as a launch game. It probably maybe is a game that the Wii U needed at launch, but now, what went, like...
Oh, if I had this at launch, I would have been way happier with my purchase. Like, I would not be sad about buying the Wii U.
I mean,
at
now
all.
We're like 8 months-ish, I think, out from Wii U launch.
I'm still just sad about Rayman.
Next month. Oh, this month, actually, for us.
I don't even know if we're going to bother getting it.
What?
I haven't played Origins yet, so...
What?
Yeah, one of the...
How could you have not, though?
I've got it.
Oh, get out.
Oh,
I've got the Wii version and the Vita version.
The Vita one, I think, is better.
Well, if you buy one more version, and that'll make it okay that you haven't played any of them.
So if I get the 3DS version?
No, that doesn't count.
So yeah, I mean, I would love to try the multiplayer Pikmin modes, but I haven't had the chance. I think it's really good. I love the soundtrack. It's very, like, whimsical, I guess.
It's really good how they've kept a lot of the themes. They've kept a lot of themes from the earlier games, but they also have new stuff, and... It's, yeah, whimsical is the perfect
it's
word.
It's funny how Nintendo does that.
Yeah, they kind of do. But yeah, it's so nice. Like, I could fall asleep to that logbook theme.
I think that's a compliment, but I'm not sure.
Oh, yes, it is. It makes me feel so much better after, you know, killing half the world's population of
Pikmin. You
kind of
feel safe up in your spaceship, I guess. Yeah.
You do, watching everyone being eaten down on the planet surface.
So, yeah, Pikmin 3. Has anyone got any final words on it before we move on?
So, well, okay. Is if you've got a Wii U, you pretty much need to have this game, is what the general consensus
no.
is?
Maybe. I don't think it's an absolutely essential purchase, but I really, really like it, and it's made my Wii U get played more than any of the other games
that I own.
I think
it's pretty fantastic, but I haven't played heaps of it, so...
I feel like it's a very, it's not a game everyone's going to like.
Yeah, that's also... It's a very strategy-orientated game.
So I think that kind of blanket statement really can't be applied to it.
I think one thing I really like about it is it's almost got a bit of a Metroid style in that you'll find things that you can't access now and you just kind of go back to it later once you have more Pikmin types.
Yeah, I get that.
I really like how they've designed the levels. Like, you'll get up to a new place that took a long time and you'll be able to push down a platform so there's an easy bridge up there for next time and... I think they've really nailed the whole exploration aspect of it. It's really fun to just walk around and find things to do. So yeah, I like it.
I can't comment, truly, because I haven't played it, but the actual game itself doesn't interest me at all. Like, it's not something I looked at and thought, yes, I would like to play this.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a mass appeal system seller.
It'd be nice if they put up a demo for people like that aren't sure. But
That'd be a good idea.
They've got demos at PAX, so the demo exists, you know?
Yeah, because I think there'd be a lot of people who'd be like me. Because, I mean, it just—I'm very disinterested in it, and a lot of it's actually just because I don't like the idea of controlling that many things. Partly because sometimes I have trouble with that stuff with my vision.
It's not really that much of an issue, though.
But that's the other thing. Like, if say, like, there's other reasons I don't want to play it, but say someone that had that problem with it they could find out in a demo. And I think it's a game that really would benefit from having a demo, because it's one that looks so much like it won't appeal to probably a lot of people. Probably not the only one who's looked at it and thought, nah, but might actually go, yeah, when they play it.
Yeah, I think it might be the biggest appeal, like, yeah. The fact that it was a GameCube game that I played at launch, and it was the most interesting launch game back at the time. I think, well, one of, I guess. But I think that's the main reason why I jumped straight onto it rather than waiting.
And a lot of people don't have that attachment because the GameCube did not do well.
Exactly, yeah, and so...
Neither did the Wii U, so it all works out.
Okay, so, I mean, I think we've said what we really can say about Pikmin. Everyone seems to like it, except for Hope, who hasn't played it yet, but... And she might not be her game, but whatever. That wasn't meant to be dismissive. That's I was meant to say whatever. Everyone can think whatever they want.
That still sounds hella dismissive, but I get what you mean. Well, you're like, whatever. I mean, I guess people are entitled to their opinions.
Yeah, no. Anyway, so we'll come back after another break, and we will be talking about PAX. PAX, PAX, PAX.
PAX. PAXIC flu.
Quite PAXIC.
Yep.
And we're back. So, me and Flame Condor stayed in Perth because we're losers. But Hope and Stephen both went to PAX as part of Vox, along with a few other people. I swear we had like 10 people attending on behalf of us.
I think we had about 5.
So, yeah, take it away, PAX guys. Tell us about your experiences.
What do you think worked well?
I think that they managed to get a lot of interesting panels. I was half expecting it just to be a trade show like an EB Expo or Go3, if anyone remembers that. But yeah, it kind of seemed to really be what I'd heard about PAX being in the US as something that actual, you know, fans really liked going to and just spending time with other people and just kind of meeting up with everyone who likes the same things that you do. And they managed to get a lot of interesting people for panels and for, you know, for musical things. It was, yeah, I found I had a lot of panels to do. It was very rare that I was bored.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot to do. They did a lot of things well in that, you know, the booths. None of the booths really had a long line, like if you want, except for the Oculus Rift. Pretty much everything else, if you wanted to see it, you could, for any way of booths. And also, did you check out the free play, sort of the tabletop tent?
I kind of walked through it a couple of times.
That place was actually amazing.
It was packed every time
I went
there.
They had this other tent. So they had the main expo hall, and then down a long corridor of cold, icy Melbourne weather, there was another sort of big hall set up. And they had Magic the Gathering set up so people could go and learn how to play. And you got decks for free and stuff. And then they had like a free play area where they had like every console on every TV and like every game. And you could just pick one up and chuck it in a console and play with people.
Oh, wow.
They had, like, a dedicated retro area as well, which was kind of interesting.
Did they have a Vectrex there?
I didn't spy one.
Yeah, I didn't actually go into the...
I'm sorry.
What was the most obscure thing they had there that you saw, Steve?
I honestly didn't pay much attention, because I was doing interesting things rather than playing retro games that I could play
at home.
No, I'm just saying, I can play retro games at home. I don't need to go to Melbourne to play those.
I had the same sort of thing. Like, I walked past it and went, that's cool, but I wasn't going in. Why would they?
So you didn't see if they had a Virtual Boy or anything like that?
Oh, I've played one. I'm glad they don't have one there.
Yeah, like, we kind of have one, and I've used one a couple of times, but it's not something you can really use at a convention.
Yeah. I think, like, it was really quite telling in the handheld lounge. They might as well have called it a 3DS lounge, because I think I spied one Vita in the 3 days that I was there.
I had the Vita in my bag the entire time, and I pulled it out to play Hotline Miami in line sometimes, but...
Yeah, I did actually bring mine to Melbourne, but on the Street Pass topic, that's the reason I brought my 3DS with me and didn't bring my Vita, because there's something that will happen with my 3DS if I bring it to a gathering of people, whereas the Vita will, I don't know, I'll play Hotline Miami, but I don't really want to do that in a line anyway.
Doesn't the Vita have Nier or whatever the hell that thing is?
Oh.
Yeah, there's nothing to actually do with it. It's just a bit of a leaderboard as to the most popular games wherever you are.
That's all I've seen it do. But I'm not that big on Street Pass either. Like, I cleared it out because I was like, oh shit, I actually have a street pass for a change because I normally live in Perth and get none. But, like,
yeah.
Because I guess it's only been a thing for me on the 3DS because it's sort of novel, I don't like it heaps and I wouldn't be too happy to have it on Vita either. But it did mean that people tended to, like, you looked at any line, you saw people with 3DSs waiting in line clearing their street pass.
Yeah, that's like, I even kind of got bored with doing that in line. Like, for the first day or so, I was just sitting there constantly in street pass. But then kind of the second and third day,
it was so boring
that I wouldn't. Because by the time I cleared out my 10 street passes, I had another 10 street passes. Well,
like, if I only had 6, I was like, the shit is like, this?
Yeah.
Like, it really got to that point.
You must have, like, stayed in the same place for 5 hours if you didn't get any more.
I got really upset when I, like, was like, okay, I'll check the entrance again, and there wouldn't be 10. It'd be like, well, that was a waste of my time.
I have to walk through the hole again.
Yeah, it was really... I got really entitled about the whole thing. Like, oh, I have to clear them all, and oh, I don't have 10, and oh.
So what would you say was, like, the big standout for you guys from the expo? The thing that you enjoyed most?
Oh, man, I think, for me, there's so many, like the fact that the Oculus Rift was there playable. You had, like, I stood in line for the better part of an hour to play the dev kit version, but I still got to try it. And then you've got the Nintendo booth with huge Pokemon tournaments and everything going on and actually interesting demos that they've brought from E3. And you had the huge wargaming thing that everybody seemed to be at. And oh, there was just so much. I didn't bother with wargaming, but it was very popular. They had a tank.
Yeah, they had a giant tank. They also had booth babes, which was really annoying.
Yeah, I heard about that. I actually didn't see any.
I didn't see any booth babes either.
That booth's direction. Well, I couldn't care.
I saw them every time I walked past, but maybe I've just got like a radar for it. Like, ooh, boobies.
What?
I just couldn't care less about World of Tanks, so I just didn't even look in the direction. I just saw the actual tank.
Booth babes. And there was also, I think, the Sennheiser booth. Maybe there were cops. There were skimpy cops.
Yeah, I think I heard about that too. On the running demo that they had above it, that was about the only interesting thing I could see while I was in line for the Oculus. I could just see it's like, hey, look at these people wearing no clothes, wearing our headphones. Do you feel like buying our headphones now?
No, I mean Sennheiser are pretty good, but it didn't sway me.
Yeah. Another great thing was there was a huge section dedicated to Australian indie devs.
That was massive.
Yeah, like you just walk in and have a chance to play it and the app, you know, one of the actual developers would be there and just like talking about it. And
it was really actually quite weird. For the first hour where press were allowed in on the Friday, like I went to the Half Brick stand just to have a look and the guy came over and started talking to me and he was like the guy who owns Jetpack Joyride.
Wow.
And it was like this really weird, like, I was like, okay, tell me about these games and like, why is it taking so long to do this? And it's this really weird, unique opportunity to talk to the people who make the games.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really love that direct one-to-one or just having some sort of connection to the people that make the games as opposed to their PR person.
We had guys from Perth there for like Freedom Fall. Did you play that?
Yeah, I did. That was one of the ones I really enjoyed, actually.
It could just be because we're in Perth, but it is actually very good.
Yeah, that helped.
The thing that I thought was really good, because I got con flu, I actually got plain flu because I was really sick pretty much the first day. And there was always somewhere to sit down, which, like, I was feeling really gross. I couldn't walk anymore. I was, like, in the tabletop section, and someone was like, why don't you come and sit down and play Magic? And I was like, yes. Like, it was just...
I wish I had have done that.
It was a really good experience to do that kind of thing, be able to have that time out if you needed it.
Yeah.
So they had, like, sort of like free play area where there were a lot of board games and stuff to choose from. The big showing was Magic, because Magic had like learn to play sections and stuff like that.
Okay.
Is there anything you guys thought didn't work at PAX?
Panels?
Yeah, get it. They didn't have enough capacity for panels. That was the biggest thing. There was some, like, the Xbox One panel was, or it's not so much a panel as a presentation, but like, the first day, like, you could have lined up for 2 hours, and if you were unlucky, you just wouldn't get in.
It was really bad. Like, a lot of the panels, the Animal Crossing panel, it's cool if you're a fan of Animal Crossing, but it was essentially just a video.
Well, it's on YouTube now.
Yeah, and the Xbox One panel was a lot of stuff we've already seen.
I did find that kind of interesting, just seeing stuff apparently being played live, but yeah, I'm glad I didn't queue for that. Well, I just kind of snuck in after they started.
To get in, you had to be there 2 hours early in the queue.
I had to make my way there at least that far ahead of time. If it was something that I really wanted to see, then yeah, I just kind of shut off 2 hours of my schedule to sit in line and clear my street passes.
On the second day, I was dressed as Lilith from Borderlands. I went to the Gearbox panel an hour early. Everyone had already been moved into the building and there was no room.
What the hell? That's weird. I wonder how you can fix that problem, though.
Like, they need bigger venues.
Yeah, I think this was probably just we're trying it out, we're going to get it.
First cons are always like this. Like, they always have these kind of problems. And it wasn't a small venue, but a lot of the, what's it called? So a lot of the places where they were having panels and stuff weren't huge.
Yeah, like they had the main theater, which was pretty massive, but the other ones were just in small
sort of conference rooms.
Yeah, and like you had people standing up, and they still had to tell people they couldn't fit in after they'd reached a certain capacity. It was kind of disappointing for a lot of people. I think it was a lot better the second day queue wise because the first day they kind of just had everyone lining up around the buildings outside in the freezing cold and occasional rain.
What they did do really smart was having that queue room.
Yeah, they used that for all the queues, I think, on the second day, and I was so happy
so
they did that.
So they had this really, really, really big hall before you went in anyway, and now I think about it, maybe that could have been used for something better because it was pretty huge.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they could have held a panel yeah. in there. But, yeah, they had this room especially for queues. So you went up and you lined in the queue room and then that queue got ushered into wherever you were going, which meant it was really easy for people to sneak in the line afterwards. So that was bad. But
it really was. Like, the moment that we started moving into a queue, you just see people just walk into the line. And then I felt even worse for the people that had been queuing for 2 hours and got in at the back and then got told they couldn't fit in because
better
people had kind of snuck in.
Queue in the freezing cold and be in everyone's way.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Them.
Oh, yeah, there was that one
corridor. Yeah, the corridor of ice.
I think on the first Xbox One event, like, there was just a standstill.
You just couldn't pass. I mean, everything other than that I thought worked pretty well at PAX. But I felt like it was such a massive flaw. Like, I stopped bothering going to panels. I tried to go for a few, I got turned down. I was like, well, fuck this shit. I'm going to go do other things.
I think the only real big one that I went to was the Good Game panel, and I just kind of fell into that line because I was talking to you and Vuk, and then the line formed around me, so that
was
kind of
neat. Oh, yeah, that's
neat.
Right. And I was like, I don't want to see Good Game.
Yeah, and then you went and watched a YouTube video. But that was the only one that I spent, the only one that I queued for ages. But on the third day, I went to the panel with Jeff Kanata, which no one probably knows about. But that one was outside, and I was there for about an hour and a half. It was worth it, but that was not a fun panel. Oh, sorry, not a fun line on the last day when I was pretty much over not being able to sleep in my own bed, having an awful flu-y thing, and just being generally exhausted.
What time did the thing close?
So on Friday and Saturday, it closed really late, like midnight.
Oh, wow.
Because they had, the panels and stuff, they went until about 5 or 6, but then you had the, musical presentations and stuff like that, which usually lasted until about midnight, and I stayed for all of those.
Who was there that, musical-wise?
Yeah, Proto Man.
I've heard of them.
MC Frontalot, the mini-bosses.
Oh, yeah?
That's all I remember. There was someone else, but I can't think who they were.
The people before MC Frontalot, there was, these local chiptune people, and I have not been more bored in my life because it was, a backing track with a guy playing a guitar you couldn't hear. That was no fun at all. I'm sorry. I wanted to support local music and people doing cool chiptune-y things, but it was so boring. I just wanted to go home. It was so bad.
So they had little things on, till quite late, but a lot of the time it wasn't really super worth staying that late, especially as press, because there were all these after-party things I kind of had to get to. I don't know if you went to any, but
because
I went to, there was a BioWare, that wasn't press actually, that was just fans, so I, met some of the writers from BioWare at an after thing, and then the next day I went to, the Wargaming party and stuff like that, so it was always a toss-up.
I heard some stories about that.
Man, that's wanky. They had this, really, really, really upper-class sort of, I almost didn't get entry. Yeah. So,
wasn't that the day where you were?
I was cosplaying, and I had to, try to make it look like I wasn't. And even then, they were like, yeah, I know.
You had, scars on your face. Maybe they thought they were real scars and they couldn't turn you away for that.
I actually washed it off.
This is why when I finally get around to going cosplay, I'm just going to go as Leighton because then I just take the hat off and I'm like just a smartly dressed person.
That's boring but cool.
Leighton's awesome. And then, I mean, I figured out I could have like little cards. I could have like riddles written. And then when I come with it, I go, this reminds me of a riddle. And then just hand it off and walk on.
So,
what would be good in the future is they really need bigger rooms for their panels. Like,
do you think, okay, let's just say that, you know, bigger rooms aren't a thing. Could you, like, well, they are a thing, but they can't do them there. So, like, would you think that maybe you could do, like, a ticketing system or something?
That'd be cool. I'd be down for ticketing.
Like, you get an assigned seat, and then you know that...
But then we'd have queues for the ticket machine.
But at least then, once it's run out, it's run out.
Maybe you could do it online.
Yeah, you could RSVP online or something, but
what else would be good is the popular panels, do them more than once.
Yeah, like, they did the Xbox One panels every day, and that's the only reason I went to it. If it was just day one, I wouldn't have bothered.
I mean, they could do... And then you can't go to both. Like, there needs to be that kind of rule. Like, if you showed up to one of these, you can't get into another one. Because that would be kind of rude. It's like, I will go to this panel every time, and no one else can see.
Yeah. It should be some sort of test to see if you actually care about the panel.
Yeah, no, that sounds way too arduous. Do you really want to go to this panel?
It's like, how much? I felt like such a douchebag. I rocked up to this Gearbox panel in full kit, and they were like, no. And I kind of just felt like being like, come on. Instead, I was like, okay, thank you, bye.
Yeah.
And I was kind of had that moment of like,
just look at
me. Do you know who I'm dressed as? Like, in my head, I'm like, surely this should be a pass. Like, surely I should just be able to walk in.
On that kind of note, another thing that worked well is the enforcers, which are basically the people that keep everything
they
running.
They get way better sort of training and stuff than any other con I've been to. Like, I know quite a few guys who...
Did you go to Supernova this year, Perf?
No.
There was this enforcer guy, and... He was acting full-on Eric Cartman, respect my authority style, and he was just some geek guy that hired, and I wanted to punch him in the face and just
there's
go,
a lot
idiot,
of the, because I know quite a few of the enforcers. A friend of mine has enforced at PAX Prime and stuff like that as well, so they volunteer at Supernova as well, and just the massive difference between the organization and the community is huge.
Yeah, my hat's off to Yug and everyone else who organised it. It went ahead, apart from the queues, it pretty much went ahead, everything as planned.
Pretty much everything else was pretty stellar for a con.
Yeah, that, as much as you had to queue, it was in a nice queue room most of the time. It's, yeah, they did a pretty
damn
good job.
Not a bad first run.
So will you guys go again next year?
Yes, probably.
It depends on who's there. Just because it is such an expense to get to Melbourne. I mean, I didn't have to pay this time, but
yeah.
Who says I'm going to be that lucky next time? And I mean, if they have it, I'd need them, like, I feel like I kind of need them to have better panel setouts because I feel kind of gypped that I didn't really see any.
Yeah, it'd suck if you came all the way from Perth to see a specific panel and you didn't think to line up 2 hours ahead of time and you just kind of missed out on the whole
thing. Some of them are like I said, the Gearbox one, it sounded like that filled up maybe 3 hours before.
That's why I kind of say, like, you know, it'd be nice to have, like, you know, ticketing or something for
exactly.
people who are travelling from Perth to be able to RSVP and book in there
and see
or something.
You know that it would fill up, but at least then you'd know that you weren't getting in, so you wouldn't be in a long-ass queue for no reason. Because a lot of people wasted several hours of their day not getting into a panel.
Yeah, you could go and actually do something interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
I was pretty lucky that most of the ones, like, there were two that had big lines, but the rest I kind of just were fairly small, so I was able to get there maybe half an hour ahead of time and had no trouble getting in.
With the Gearbox one, do we know how many people were just there angry at aliens, colonial marines?
I don't think anyone was, because I'm not sure... I don't think many of these guys were actually working on that.
No, yeah, I think it was just like actual core Gearbox.
It was a lame joke, sorry.
I know that they had Anthony Birch there, who's the writer, the main head writer
I
of Borderlands 2.
I think they had Pitchford, didn't they?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure so, Randy like, Pitchford was there as well.
Really excited to see, and it was like, nope. I'm like,
yeah, it would have been one that I would have been excited to see if I... Sort of, the line was, the queue was full before I even arrived that day, I'm pretty sure, so I just kind of gave up.
Do we know who else was there, like, media type? Like, I mean, I'm sure, was, like, Jim Sterling there, or,
Nah, because you're gonna, San Diego Comic-Con was happening at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Did both of you guys play any of the stuff at the Nintendo booths?
The only thing I got onto was the Super Mario 3D World.
Yeah. And Steve?
Yeah, I played pretty much everything there except Link Between Worlds.
I didn't even see it.
Oh. I'm not interested in that one the most.
It was really weird because I was... That's what... I mean, you guys asked me before if it was there. And I was like, I don't think so because I didn't even see it. Maybe it was hidden?
Yeah, I think they had on the DS tables, they had like two tables of Link Between Worlds, one of Dream Team Brothers and one of Sonic Lost World.
Okay, so we'll start off. We'll start off with Mario. So what did you guys think of Mario?
I'm so bored with Mario.
Okay.
It's the same game again. Yeah, I don't know. I'm over it because the innovating doesn't really ever feel like real innovation to me. It just feels like reprinting.
But he's a cat.
Yeah, I won't disagree on that because, yes, the cat suit was, I really liked it because he could climb up walls and stuff, but it's not a changing of the overall mechanics. It's just...
I feel like it shouldn't be, like, it shouldn't cost a whole new game for that.
I think if it was on the 3DS, I wouldn't be surprised if it could be like a new Super Luigi U style DLC. But being on the Wii U, I really, really liked it. I'm going to be buying it day one.
How does it look?
Super excited about it before. It looks really, really nice. Like, everything's super clean and 1080p, 60 frames a second.
It's really crisp. I mean, the graphics are simple Mario graphics. So they've got that.
That's the thing with Mario graphics; they don't need to get much better than they are. They're completely serviceable for what they need.
We could still be playing it on the 64, and it would be fine.
Oh, I don't know if I go that far, but
yeah.
I think one thing that struck me as working quite well in 3D World versus like the new Super Mario Bros. U is the multiplayer was so much more fun. Like you're not getting in each other's way like you would
in
3D,
and you can walk around each other.
Exactly. You've got so much more room. Like in New Super Mario Brothers, I found myself, if I was playing with someone who was crap at the game, they held me back. If I was playing with someone that was good at the game, they did exactly the same thing I did and we got in each other's way. When I was playing 3D World, I was playing with my brother who is, similarly skilled to me and two people I didn't know that didn't really seem terribly good at it. But the game seemed to keep up with whoever was ahead rather than holding everyone back for the person who was behind. So
I wonder what that felt like for someone who was behind.
Yeah, it just like pulled them into a bubble and brought them to where you were. Like there were some parts.
So frustrating, I reckon. Like fuck, I suck at this game. Fuck, the game is making me suck harder.
I think it would be. There were certain points where it would have a whole bunch of switches or things you needed to collect or something like that, and that kind of meant that if you were really, really good at it and the other people were super crap, one person could do it all. But I rarely found that. It was usually, I'd get a couple and it'd have enough stuff to do that it would allow the other people to feel like they've actually contributed as well. Yeah, not really. But they looked like they had fun after they finished. Like, we wanted to keep playing after. Then we got to play three levels before we kind of got ushered away. And, yeah, I think everyone kind of liked it, and I'm super jazzed about it now.
I won't ever call myself super jazzed for it, because it's just another one of the same, and it would be fine, but I haven't found, like, if it was another one of the same of, like, world's most awesome game, I'd be like, yeah, another one of the same, but it's getting really old for me. Like, it's exactly the same, and a cat suit, like, yeah, I can climb, but I didn't feel like it was, good.
It's definitely more of the same, but I thought that 3D Land was different enough. It wasn't a full 3D galaxy. It wasn't a 2D Mario. It was a blend between the two, which, takes two old elements and melds them together. It was new enough for me because I'd try and find anything to like in Nintendo because I'm a lost soul. I really like it, but I can definitely see where you're coming from. It's not going to blow people away who have played a Mario game in the last 5 years.
Okay, in other new games, what about Wind Waker HD?
I didn't play it, but I saw other people playing it, and I really dig the HD graphics.
Yeah, if you've played the GameCube version, you really didn't need to play the demo. You just needed to watch people, and you could kind of tell what was going on anyway.
You're like myself, a GameCube aficionado.
Yes.
How much? Because all the footage I've seen of it, it doesn't really look that different.
Are you joking?
Does it?
It's really crisp, hey?
No, I can't see the difference. I cannot. I probably need to see like a side-by-side comparison.
It is super, super nice.
You need to play it on GameCube again because you can see the difference.
I think that if you look at it side-by-side, then you'll see you've probably got nostalgia glasses on when you look at the HD version. It's like, it's always looked like this, but it kind of hasn't. Like, it's... I think it's lost a lot of the, it's, you know, pure primary colors here and here. It's got a lot more shading, a lot more effects to it.
Because they can.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if they're playing like a, what, 12-year-old game, they can just kind of add as many shaders as they want and it'll still be fine. It's the GameCube game, but in HD. There were no changes to the game mechanics in at least the demos that I was able to play.
What was the gamepad, the inventory and stuff? Did you guys manage to see that?
I couldn't really get a look.
They didn't give much of an opportunity to use the gamepad because the level that I played was the battle against the Helmarok King, which is a big bird at the top of a tower, if anyone remembers. But like it gave you like it mapped all your things to A, B, X, Y, and you had everything you needed already mapped, so you didn't really I didn't bother going into the inventory because I just didn't think about it.
So what was on the gamepad while you were playing though? The map.
I honestly didn't look down. I was just.
Oh, what?
I'm sorry. I was. But yeah, it's. I'm pretty sure like there was a. Mainly it was a map from memory, but yeah, I didn't look down very much because it was too exciting.
That's a good excuse.
That's all right. So none of you played Link Between Worlds?
I'm sorry.
I watched some footage of it the other day and it was really gorgeous.
Oh, okay. Sonic Lost World. Did any of you guys play that?
Yes.
And just before we go ahead, Stephen is a huge Sonic fan.
Disclaimer.
I am.
The Sonic fans are really rabid. They really get angry at us whenever we say something bad about a Sonic game.
What about the recent Sonic games?
Generations was incredible.
I do like Generations.
I love Generations.
No, they still get angry. So anyway, Lost World, tell us about it, Stephen.
I don't know if it's just the demo that they gave me,
Is this 3DS or Wii U first?
3DS, yeah, was on the 3DS. Yeah. They didn't have the Wii U version available. But like, it's the demo that they had there was nothing like any of the videos that they'd presented before. None of this, you know, open world sort of on a cylinder level or anything like that. It was a 2D in a sort of like a Egyptian pyramid cave with lots of stopping and starting, and I didn't like it very much at all. The demo kind of made me not interested in Sonic Lost World anymore.
Did you like Unleashed?
I liked parts of Unleashed.
You liked the fast parts and hated the werewolf parts?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I respect your opinion.
It felt similar to the werewolf parts in that it really didn't understand why people enjoy Sonic. It's not purely because it's a fast game, because, you know, just holding right and jumping occasionally is not fun. But it didn't have... The thing that really gets Sonic games that I really like is that the levels are built around momentum and they'll be like...
They flow really well if they're good.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. They'll have levels that will be designed around you going fast, and if you're going fast enough at a certain point, you'll be able to get up to an area that you wouldn't otherwise. And yeah, it's just sort of they're built around you'll have heaps of different ways to explore it and everything like that. And this had nothing of the type. It was one way through it. There was nearly like as you went through, like you started the level, it was really promising because you started at full speed and then like in a second you hit a wall and then you're just in this awkward part where it's kill four enemies to open the door to get to the next part and then, you know, jump on this enemy to make it stick on a button to get to the next part. It was all very, very basic puzzles and not very much fun. The one thing that I didn't know was going to happen, it was say you're running up and there's a wall that goes, you know, it's at a 90-degree angle to the ground. If you're running fast enough, you just keep running up the wall, which in other levels it might make for some really interesting flow, but in this it was, I don't know, really confusing because it was all clustered together and, yeah. So I can see that other levels might be really good because you'd be able to keep your momentum going up walls and then doing a wall jump and keep going and everything like that, but this level was just not fun at all. It was the antithesis of what I think a Sonic game should be.
And the 3DS version is basically the Wii U version, correct? Like, it's not. It's basically a 3D... It's the same kind of game. So like, where Colors was kind of like a, you know, 3D version and then a 2D version for the DS. It's a different...
Yeah, I'm not too sure on that. I know it's sort of going to be based on the same, having similar levels and things like that, but I hope the Wii U version, and like from all I've seen of that, it's a lot more open world, whereas this seemed to be strictly 2D, and that's similar to they did with Colors versus Colors DS. It was 2D versus a open-er world, and yeah, so it's not made me terribly excited for it, but I still kind of want to see how it goes, because the Wii U version looks quite cool with the open world and everything, and they've done pretty well. Colors was, I liked it, Generations was fantastic, And I'm just hoping this was a terrible choice of demo level.
Oh, okay, well...
Sorry to end it on a terrible note.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. So that's all the latest stuff from PAX from the team who attended. Thanks for going, guys, and thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
So we'll have one more break, and then we'll come back to wrap this up. And we're back, so just quickly we'll go over some of the stuff that we've been doing on the site. First of all, there's 5 reviews up total at the moment since last time. Mensa Academy and Aquamoto Racer.
Ouch, on the review for Aquamoto.
I'm sure you've all been waiting for those.
Vuk also imported one of the expanded batteries for the Wii U gamepad and the official Nintendo Wii Remote Charger, so we've got impressions and a video of all that. The big two ones are probably Mario and Luigi Dream Team Bros, which I kind of liked, but...
You seemed pretty positive on it on the last podcast.
Pretty positive, but I mean, I've had some time to reflect, so I mean, I've kind of come back down to, you know, level ground, if that makes sense.
You're not high on Nintendo anymore.
That review is up there. Coming soon, probably by the time you read the site, or you hear this, podcast.
Read this podcast.
Yes. There will be a Pikmin 3 review up, because I'm not doing it. I had to take a break, so Vuk's doing it. On top of that, we've also got a weekly wrap, which is done by Hope, for PAX and the latest news. So be sure to check that out if you can.
Yeah.
And lots of words about our PAX impressions.
Yes, and there's lots of words online about the games that we played, the experience itself, and everything that came out of PAX. So yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Do you guys have anything you want to say before we go? I've got
Professor Layton and the Miracle Mask, that's only 790 megabytes on the eShop. That's what you might want to know that.
I hate you.
Why did you give him the opportunity?
Harvest Moon 3D, The Tale of Two Towns is 241 megabytes.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. The site's address is www.vooks.net. It's like books, but with a V.
I love that.
The amount of people that are like, so Vooks, I'm like, no.
Vook like a book.
Yeah. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, the usual. The next podcast will actually be about DuckTales Remastered, which is going to be out probably the day before we record. So if you have any questions about DuckTales Remastered, be sure to post them on our Facebook page or your Twitter.
Is it Angry Birds Trilogy also out around the same time?
Does anybody care?
I'm not going to be taking questions for Angry Birds Trilogy, so... People can ask questions, but don't expect them to get answered.
We're going to get, like, more questions than we ever have, just all about Angry Birds now.
So, yeah, thanks for listening, everyone, and we will see you in a fortnight's time. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Have you seen the DuckTales theme next episode?
You can't.
Damn it.